Okay, this is another episode of Out Now Nights.
Nights.
This is Out Now Nights.
Nights.
31.
31?
I know. And we were on a run last year. We did a lot of nights. So this year we did one for Dune, and then we got lost in the desert because we haven't done one since. But we're back.
I mean, you know, we're being hunted down by, like, the freaking, like, Arrakis guys, so...
Yeah, that was the reason.
Yeah,
we had to go to the southern part of Arrakis, where things are more treacherous.
Yeah, we got to go with the zealots.
Anyway, for Out Now Nights 31, we're going to talk about a film that we haven't discussed before, despite the fact that we're huge fans of Laika.
Yeah,
the stop motion.
Some might say the biggest fans.
I certainly like to hold that title.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I think if we put enough effort in, we could get like badges.
Yeah, I think that you and I, even at one point, were like when they used to be like, you might be able to crowdfund this Laika movie. I think that you and I were like, we should do this.
But regardless,
keep going.
Uh-huh. We've talked about all the Laika films with the exception of one, which is of course Coraline, which celebrated its 15th anniversary this weekend, and in doing so, it managed to make $20 million worldwide at the box office.
Yeah.
Just for some perspective, the original film, when it was released in 2009, opened to $16 million. So there's a fan base for Coraline, which isn't like a surprise, but like at a time like this, where like the re-releases, you can only do so much with some of them, let alone for movies like a Coraline compared to like a Star Wars. Seeing this one like do as well as it did with like, you know, packed Fathom script for a Fathom event, no less.
Yeah.
Like that's pretty cool. It's pretty cool to see.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's always great to see like movies that everybody enjoys come back. Did you have those screenings around at a theater near you where the managers be like, I'm just going to play Batman 89 and people can come see it, or Back to the Future?
I never had the screenings of like, we're just randomly doing this. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I like the idea. Like a manager being like, I'm going to put up like a hand-drawn sign saying, we're not showing the regular movies tonight, guys.
Yeah.
We're going to show some of these instead.
There used to be the United Artists in Berkeley, which is now closed, and they're making housing out of it. But the manager there would choose like movies. Like he would be the one that choose what's the term? Like programmed like the movies. And so he would choose like all these cool movies from the 80s and 90s, and I remember like being bummed out. I was like, well, it's always going to be there. I'll go see Terminator 2 at a different time. And I should have gotten to go see Terminator 2 on the screen.
Yeah, I mean, we have like the older like independent theaters that do that. Like obviously in LA, there's plenty of those down where I am. There's a theater called the Frida Cinema that does its own programming because they don't, you know, they don't need to abide by certain things. Mm-hmm. Like it's for one thing, it's a nonprofit, but you know, a Regal is not going to randomly shut down their programming for the sake of like whatever they want to. But that said, that is why things like Fathom exist.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and I want to hear from you as well how your experience went, but I've certainly had my issues with Fathom in the past because they don't always do proper framing, or their timing's all messed up, or any number of technical issues that have plagued their showings. That said, they're not an entirely idiotic company. I mean, for one thing, we just talked about Kiki's Delivery Service.
Yes, we did.
For our this month's commentary track. And one thing that Fathom does every year is Ghibli Fest, where they show Studio Ghibli films from, I think, like April all the way to October, like two a month or something like that, which is cool as far as just like, here's more awareness on this studio's very specific movies for all audiences to see. On top of that, they do plenty of other things. They do like opera events. They do like all kinds of showings and whatnot. Now, when it comes to the movies, like I mentioned, not always the best. All of that said, I went and saw Coraline on Friday, last Friday from when we're recording. It was nearly sold out, which I didn't realize it would be. And this is emphasizing how packed the screening was.
Yeah.
Like I thought I could wait to just get my ticket when I want, just to make sure I knew what time I wanted to see it. But by the time I got it, I was like, oh, okay, I need to get my ticket because it's going to be sold out. And so I got a seat that was fine. But still, time I got there, again, to the movie showing at an AMC, no less, which I'm not huge on. I figured, okay, we sit down and let's do all the stuff and lead off with Nicole Kidman and then the previews. No previews.
No.
No commercials, no previews. The only thing they had was a teaser for Wildwood, the Leica's next feature, which is like a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And then the movie started right away. Not only did the movie start right away, and in 3D, it was properly lit. It was the right aspect ratio. There was a nice featurette at the end. Everything happened the best possible way for a Fathom event screening to watch Coraline, and I'm very happy with that. I shouted Fathom out on Twitter for that, because I give credit where credit's due, and I was very happy. Like, I've gotten refunds from Fathom events before.
I know. I was actually going to bring up that, Aaron, your experience with Fathom, I think I've only heard, like, horror stories from you from Fathom events, because I remember that you guys went to go see, like, either Roman Holiday or something like that, and you're like,
it was Roman Holiday, yeah.
Fucking terrible. I had a terrible experience. And I was
they started like sucks. 20 minutes late and there was no sound for the first five. Yeah. Oh my God. It was ridiculous.
For, you know, arguably one of like the most important movies of all time.
For a spectacular film, yes. So this experience was like the polar opposite. It was the best
way. Did you
way
also go to AMC for the Roman Holiday one?
That was a Regal, actually, not a Regal.
Oh, no, your favorite.
Not a Regal in my county, because you can't always count on them to be the same. But still, it was a Regal, which was unfortunate. Yeah. Abe, how was your experience just watching Coraline?
My experience was very good. I was looking at tickets because I knew that this was going to be coming back out in 3D. And I thought it was actually going to be like ultra limited engagement. I thought it was just going to be like Thursday. Mm-hmm. Or maybe Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, like a 4-day engagement. Because Fathom events are usually it's like hours.
Yeah, it'll be like a Friday, and then it'll be like a repeat on Sunday or something.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
That. But certainly not the week that it's going, and it's gonna, I believe, expanding more because it's been so popular. Yeah,
that's fantastic. But I was very concerned because when I was looking at tickets on the mobile apps, they were all very packed, and it was very distressing because there were only the 3D showings. For the weekday was only at 4 p.m.
That's the other thing, right? I would think that they're going to just show it exclusively in 3D because why else would you want to go? And I get, not everyone likes 3D, but I wouldn't think that the majority of screenings wouldn't be in 3D, which threw me off. So I was like, all right. So there's only like two a day at most.
And so I waited for Saturday, and then I was looking around at theaters, and this is actually where I was texting Aaron. I was like, hey man, what's your experience with Real D 3D at AMC's and over at Cinemark's? And Aaron was like, well, you know, if I had to choose between the two, I'd choose the Cinemark. And I was like, you're right. So I went to the Cinemark, and this is a Cinemark that, you know, it's in an area where people still go, but it wasn't as packed as an AMC and another Cinemark, which would have been like, you know, 15 miles away. So I went to go see it, and it was great. It was a great experience. Like, I genuinely, everybody there was genuinely enthralled by the movie.
Nice.
And they brought their kids, and their kids were having a good time. And the thing is, like, Coraline, as we'll get to in a minute here, it has some darker themes. So the kids were like, not just like tossing popcorn around and like screaming, like they were engaged with the movie. And to Aaron's point, I went to the theater expecting previews, and I was like, well, you know, Cinemark, Aaron and I go to the movies so often that we have timed down exactly how long the previews are, how long, like, the if you're in at a premium screening, there'll be like another extra 60 seconds of like IMAX or Dolby, and then there's at an AMC you'll have like another 15 seconds or 30 seconds of Nicole Kidman. I went there and I was like, well, you know, I'm gonna get there right on time. Nope, the movie started exactly correctly, so I was 15 minutes late to the movie.
That's not great, but
imagine my surprise when I was like, it started on time. Because I had missed all of the parts in which Coraline and her family arrive at their new home.
Yeah, you missed the opening credits where it's like the movie right away shows you the 3D is great because cool it has that one amazing shot where there's where she's sewing the buttons and the needle comes right at the screen.
But I basically just got to the part where it starts picking up a little bit more. But yeah, no, the experience was great. And I was really happy that a lot of people stayed for the special afterward. The special afterward is not short. It's probably like 10 minutes or 12 minutes, you know.
It's a good size special.
Yeah. So it was really, really nice to have everyone stay there. And again, people were really they were very engaged with the movie, and I was very proud to be a part of that.
Good, 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 good. Well,
yeah.
Let's get into the film more. Let's talk a bit about Coraline.
Okay.
You do like it here, don't you, Coraline?
Uh-huh.
Mother said you'd like it. Boy, she knows you like the back of her hand.
How can you walk away from something and still come back to it?
Welcome back. It's been a while.
We've been waiting for you, Coraline.
My name!
You probably think this world is a dream come true. But you're wrong.
Did you see Coraline when it first came out in theaters?
I did not, no, because this is always my lament that I had never seen it in theaters nor in 3D. And I, by all accounts, by everybody I've ever spoken to, whether that be just a non-critic or a critic, people are like, this is one of the best uses of 3D ever. And so I've always been very sad about it, which is why I've always been on the lookout for Coraline in 3D.
Yeah.
And that's why I was very excited this time. But I did not watch it in theaters. I watched it post theaters and was instantly enthralled by it. And then just, I loved like the asymmetry of everything, but I also really love that it was based on a book, but they took some, they didn't take ultra liberties with it, but I just have always dug this. You know, I've talked about this many, many times. And I brought this up many, many times. I love the like of things. I just like that they go for it. They don't really hold things back from a thematic standpoint. So yeah, I did not watch it in theaters though. Did you catch it first wave?
Oh yeah. I was very excited about Core, cause I was big on the fact that it was a Neil Gaiman thing coming to theaters.
Sure.
I was big on Stardust as far as like stuff that he's worked on that's gone to theaters, and yeah. And I was like, okay, Coraline, great. And it's stop motion and it's Henry Selick. So like all those factors, I was like, cool. And like the idea that there was a new animation studio doing something, and like being such a big like Nightmare Before Christmas guy, but sure. I still love it, but like when I was younger for sure, it's like that guy made his own new stop motion animation. Like, great, cool, let's see where this goes. And yeah, it was a great 3D experience. And this is 2009 before Avatar comes out, so this, you know, 3D is still like unique. It's not a thing that happens all the time. So yeah. Getting like this stop motion and like leading up to it, I'm seeing the featurettes about like how it's because it's stop motion, they have to like do everything like double essentially with the shots and all that to like make the stereoscopic 3D stuff work and all that.
Yeah.
So I was both excited because like the movie looked cool, but also because of just like the technique involved and everything. So yeah, I saw it in theaters, was very pleased by the 3D experience. And then when the Blu-ray came out, it came with four pairs of like red blue glasses,
mm-hmm.
which worked. They did work. Okay. So yeah. I was like happy to like watch it in 3D at home. I don't like watch it all the time, but it was like, that's fun. Like that I have the option that I can do this.
Mm-hmm.
I've had plenty of experience seeing Coraline, and it was just great to, you know, have a chance to see it again on the big screen.
Yeah.
But with all that in mind, obviously we're fans of Leica here, but what do you think of Coraline?
I've loved Coraline for a while. Like I really enjoy how brisk it is. It's only like 90 some odd minutes, but it's very meaty. Like there's a lot going on, and it feels very weighty in terms of like everything that Coraline has to do. But what I enjoy about it the most is what I was talking about earlier. It has like a darkness to it too. And that darkness is widely accepted by the folks over at Leica. I mean, the story by Neil Gaiman, his stuff is generally like, you know, it can be kid friendly, but it also can be quite dark at times. I think about like Something Wicked This Way Comes. And that's like about teenagers and, you know, this dark carnival that comes to town. But when you're reading about it, these protagonists have to like step up. There's like some really good protagonist actions that happen with it. As far as like watching handcrafted stop motion animation, I'm always a big fan of this. Like I know that animation can take over a lot of things like this too, which they talk about sort of in the special after the credits. But I'm always a big fan of seeing folks put in a lot of time and effort into making something like this come to life. So ever since I've seen it, I have been a fan, and I don't collect a lot of I don't collect a lot of physical media, but Coraline is one of the DVDs, few DVDs that I do own.
Yeah, look at you.
I know.
Oh, I want to see this shelf.
It's literally like
I'm sure
three things, including your copy of Million Dollar Arm that you sent me for my birthday, which is still unopened.
Yeah, you want to save it for the right occasion.
No, it's a collector's item. If you unopen it, like, it's worthless.
Oh yeah, just like the baseball cards that those guys aren't on.
it was supposed to be a big movie that summer. Well, what did you think of your initial thoughts of the movie, or even like continued thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, if anything, I'd say the film has grown on me over the years. Like, I certainly like Coraline. We're both huge on Paranorman. I think we would both
say, very big.
I think we'd both say Paranorman is like peak Laika. That's not to like put other films down. I like all of the Laika films a lot, but by comparison, yeah, Coraline is one where I've always liked it. I think. Taking away the first this time around watching it is, like, we've talked about the idea of gateway horror a lot on this show, and
interesting, yeah,
and the film is certainly, like, we referenced this being a good entry in that realm as far as like getting kids into horror. Watching it this time, there's really no mistaking for the fact that this is essentially a horror movie that just happens to involve youngsters and be geared towards a younger audience, but like,
yeah,
everything about it screams horror at me when I was watching it in a theater, where like the score, which has like this these like ominous children voices on the soundtrack, just the notion of the other mother and having, you know, the buttons sewn on her eyes, and like the world has buttons sewn all over their eyes, like, that's, it's just like a lot of creepy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The way the plot functions is not unlike a kind of fantasy horror film as far as what needs to happen and how things resolve. There's even like final scares of like creepy arms coming out of doors and chasing out, like, there's just a lot of elements there that, like, this is a horror film, like, there's no, like, I wouldn't call this anything else. It just happens to be for a certain audience, and I appreciate that. Like, it's neat to see films that, you know, can introduce audiences to different genres and help them explore things in a way that feels, you know, natural. Mm-hmm. To get to, like, why I think the movie is very good but not, like, my favorite thing, I always just felt like the ending of it, not the very end, but, like, the final act becomes a little bit too video gamey for me, as far as Coraline has to find three things scattered all over the world to fulfill an objective and defeat the final boss. Now, again, watching it this time, and I've seen it several times over the years, I felt more and more this way. It just didn't bother me as much. Like, I'm just too used to what the story is to let that kind of get to me. I still think that at least two other Laika films kind of have better resolves for their main plots compared to Coraline. But
you want to name them or not now?
It's Paranorman and Kubo. I think
really good.
I think those two are the better films. But again,
those were the two that I thought you were going to say.
Yeah, and I mean, even other ones of them have more interesting resolves to their antagonists than I think this one necessarily does. But I mean, it's no matter. This movie rocks. I mean, it's. Along with, yes, all the stuff that you've mentioned already, and like what they're doing with storytelling and whatnot, the design of this is so neat and fun to look at and creative. Henry Selick is a guy who, but like, I think Wendell and Wilde did this as well, last year's release from him, where he still maintains the kind of the look of stop motion animation, where you can see the different, like, frame by frame, you can see the, you know, the human elements as far as touching it, and like, it all looks different, where most of Laika's films have this kind of program that smooths all that stuff out, which.
Yeah. I remember we talked about that.
Yeah. I know David, friend of the show, he's brought that up a lot too, where that's not a bad choice, but at the same time, it does somewhat hide the fact that it's a handmade thing at times.
Yeah.
Like, you can tell Coraline is a film that's made by hand. You can tell it's a very physical thing. I don't think you can't necessarily tell that in Box Trolls or Missing Link, what have you. But because it's so smoothed over, it feels like it's slightly diminishing, like, the hard work and effort that goes into, like, making these giant worlds come to life and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why, as you pointed out many times, it's great to see in the credits they always do, like, the let's show, like, a time lapse of one of the, like, giant set pieces that we had in our movie.
Yeah.
But Coraline is not that. Coraline it looks like that. It looks like Nightmare. It looks like the Rankin Bass specials where you can, does, like, yeah, you can see the fingerprints. Like, you can see
that. And it still looks like you could still see, you know how, like, there's like motion smoothing and interpolation there. Yeah. You can still see like some sort of like, oh, there's like a larger like footstep than a normal footstep would be. And so it looks like there's like a weird like frame gap. I was like, this is fun to see.
Yeah. King Kong. I mean, like, it's
sure.
It's,
yeah.
There's so...
You're talking about the Jack Black one, right? You do love that one.
I do. I love it as much as the 33 one that I'm referencing. But yeah. I would be amused to see something of that nature with Jack Black. But yeah, I mean, it's just like that's a very specific element that just you can't get in any other kind of movie. And yeah. So it's neat to see it here, let alone on a big screen again, which you just haven't done in a while.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. I think that there's actually a really cool thing about what you were talking about there, too, because I also grew up on like on the Nick Park Aardman before it was
Aardman
like,
stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Just like Nick Park, Wallace and Gromit stuff. And you can definitely see all the thumbprints that they did in all the stop motion stuff there. And what was really fun about watching all the old Wallace and Gromit original series items is that they're only like 10 minutes long. They're very short. And so. But they tell very, very complete stories, which is fantastic. So when you get to something like Leica, where they're like, hey, we're actually not going to hand draw things, or we're not going to, like, you know, computer animate things. We're just going to choose to do stop motion animation here. It's very fun. It's very cool. And you and I talked about this, like, with the advent of newer films. From animation studios, whether that be Puss in Boots or The Nice Guys or whatever the case might be, they are playing with animation styles.
The Spider-Verse and, films, obviously.
Yeah, Spider-Verse films for sure, where like you can see different shades of animation, or it's not just like the flat 2D stuff that you saw like in the 80s and 90s from Disney, and it's not just like the simple, or not quote-unquote simple, but it's not just like the blocks and shapes that you've seen from Pixar over the years. Like, even Pixar this past year, we talked about it in Inside Out 2. You see that they go to like this weird like 2D animation drawing type situation very quickly. And for something like Leica, just be like, we're going to go with this medium that is not an easy medium to create for, but still we're going to be able to sell a full 90 plus minute story with it. It was really interesting. It's really fascinating to check out. And that's why I think that you and I support them so hardcore, is because we're like, please, like, you know, don't let the detractors like stop you guys from doing some good stuff here. And that's why I'm also very excited for what a project they've got coming up.
Yeah, no, I have no reason to never not be excited for Leica right now. And mm-hmm. even, you know, as they've moved on or they've progressed, you know, obviously there's much like any number of films, there's a variety of techniques that they're using. Like, obviously the stop motion is by and large the majority of the work they do, but everything's still like handcrafted in its own way, whether it's like a fire that they draw and incorporate into a piece of wood that is also still made into stop motion, or, you know, the deletion of things because you just got to make things look as clean as you can. Like, yeah. they have an ethic in mind as far as how to like make all that work.
Yeah.
And it pleases me. Yeah, it's just great to see. As far as this movie goes,
yeah, I was like, let's go back to the movie.
Something I really like that I've always liked about Coraline is the fact that the character of Coraline, voiced by Dakota Fanning, is a brat. She's
out the gate.
She's bored in her house. She's a jerk to the kid that's like trying to be friends with her. Like,
she's got a name, Aaron.
Yeah, why be? Why as in why were you born, as she jokes. Like, right away. And it's not like she's a brat in like an unlikable way. It's just more she feels like a kid that exists in a place where she's moved away from her friends. She doesn't know anything else that's going on here. She's stuck in the house because it's either raining outside or what. There's weird people all over the place. Like, yeah, she's bored. And so she acts out. And like, I like that. I like that that's the character that we're giving.
But her parents are also busy.
That's the other thing. Yes.
Like, it really helps to like just say, hey, they're busy, so let's center this movie on this young woman. You know what I mean?
It gives her journey. It gives the appropriate drive to why she would even consider signing on to another mother in another scenario.
Yeah.
Complete with, you know, fresh food and attention and all this stuff. like the she walks in on the I mean her mom is voiced by Terry Hatcher, both her yep. mom and the other mother, and then her dad is John Hodgman. But the second she sees John Hodgman in the other world, where in one world he's like over the computer, doesn't have any time at all for anything, yep. she comes into other father and he's like, let me play a song through the voice of They Might Be Giants. And I'm like, all right, like this yeah. is great. I like, why would I not want to be in this world? Yeah. And we find out why. But still, for a second there, it's a fun world.
It is a fun world, and it gets there very quickly. I think that there's a really cool color balance that they do with the world that you were describing yeah. in her reality, where it's like it's rainy, it's wet, it's, you know, kind of drab looking.
It's drab, yeah.
Yeah, and then you get to the other world, and it is where it was maybe like 50 years ago, where the paint is fresh, but also like they just definitely changed like the color up. It's very like Wizard of Oz-ish,
very
not exactly
so.
All black and white into color, but still like this, you know, again, drier, grayer colors into much more like a more beautiful setting. So when you do get to Coraline waking up in her bed, after having a really good time with other mother, other father, and a delicious dinner with including like gravy and a train and everything like that, it's very obvious that it's just like, oh, that it is kind of boring in your room, and there's like not a whole lot going on. But yeah, what I also enjoy about it too, like going back to some of the thematic things, as you're talking about when how things have grown on you, the things that have grown on me are the themes of loss in this movie. And I'm not talking about like, you know, well, you know, people die. It's like, no, there are dead kids in this bed behind a mirror. And when I first saw it, I was like, oh, this is weird. Like these spirits are here. It's like, no, they're lamenting the fact that they fell into this trap and they're not at peace. And it's very disturbing when you're an adult and you're like, this is actually some deep stuff here about how these kids have never been at peace and they're just stuck underneath this blanket. And it's really, really sad and kind of heartbreaking. And you're happy when they finally are released. But yeah, it's like we were saying, there's like some really good dark themes here. So I would love for people to experience this and, you know, revisit it from time to time.
It adds to why the film is very much a horror movie, because it's about a mother that either sews buttons on your eyes or you're a dead child.
Yeah, exactly.
That's dark stuff.
Not only dead, but apparently you just go missing, like, because there's
the real worlds are like missing. But like when those dead children's spirits come out, it's not like the kids are back alive again. They're still dead. Like,
yeah, that's sad. True. That's like, true. Yeah, it is sad.
It's not like a little kid walked out from under the bed. It's like, oh, finally. It's not like they're the kids. They're not like the kids from Magic Beach, where they're like, I guess I'm 40 years old now, but at least I'm not dead in the butt in a little snow globe anymore.
That's true. Yeah.
No. It's dark.
It is. Yeah. But I think the other element that I like about it too is just going back to like the other world for a second. The other world is very cool. You know, the way that it's designed, the way that they've envisioned it, you know, I'm sure that they had some visual aids and some accompaniment from the book itself in the way that it's described. But when you're watching it by itself and you haven't read Coraline, which I have not read, I'm sure that it's very short, fairly short, maybe.
It's like a novella. It's not okay. It's short. Yes.
Is that a tiny book? Like, you know, a 3-inch by 2-inch book? That's not a novella. You're going to. OK. All right.
No, it's still like it's like 200 pages. Like it has it's, you know, it's not.
Yeah. Gaiman is a hefty writer.
He can be. Yeah. But this is what it's designed as, a children's novella. So it's right. You know, it's like, you know, it's like a Goosebumps. Yeah. You can knock it out pretty quickly.
But the world that they're showing there with all like the live plants, like the beautiful colors, they glow, the snapdragons, like the bridge that has Coraline's face in it when it zooms out, like, it's all really, really well done and really well thought out. I'm always a big fan of how directors and storyboard artists or production designers all think these things out. I think I've been most impressed in paying attention to this since you and I talked about How to Teach the Meatballs like many, many moons ago, where it was like they turned a 16-page book into like this beautiful world. I was like, yeah, get on them.
It's also, you're speaking of the other world and, you know, the designs, it also speaks to why the 3D, I think, is so great, because it's not just that it looks amazing, which it does, just by nature of being stop motion and just the technique they use to make it like real 3D. But it's also 3D that does what my favorite films in 3D do, which is applies that to the narrative and the thematics that are at play.
Okay.
It's a film where once you go, like, it's not like it's not 3D before you get to the other world, but because you have this immersive aspect in there, it just adds an extra level of like, this makes sense that I have another like added dimension in my theater to watch this movie through as I'm entering a new world. And it's, you know, it's projecting this at me in the way that it is. And yeah, even thematically, there's literal greater depth to what's taking place while you're watching these events play out the way they do. Not unlike Hugo, not unlike Avatar. Those are movies that absolutely use 3D to their fullest, both as far as visually, but also narratively. And it just makes this film all the more special because of that. And there's just nothing else really like it. Like the preceding Leica films, I'm hard pressed to know if they offhand, if they they also do the same thing with 3D, or if Coraline was like a one and done effort on their part, but is the, you know, all the conversion stuff and everything.
Sure.
But
yeah,
but Coraline, it just looks better. That, like, I, you know, I've seen the other, like, some of the other, like, I saw Paranorman in 3D. I can't remember I've seen how many of the other ones in 3D, but like this one specifically feels like the best use of 3D in an animated feature.
Yeah. Like, one of the things that was a criticism from back then, that was that Coraline kind of defeated too, is that 3D used to be somewhat dark, because they would have to make it a shade darker so that you could get that 3D effect. And even with the glasses on, it just makes it darker still. But Coraline, I don't know how it was the first run when you had the 3D glasses, very bright in this movie. Like, it looked normal. Like, I was just like watching it without the 3D glasses, but still getting the effect. So I don't know how, if that has always been the case, or whether that they changed something for the 15-year anniversary.
It's a theater issue, not a formatting issue. Like, the films are designed to be how they are so they can properly be shown.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously being remastered for 3D, you know, again, like, that's only going to help, because the, you know, you have 4K you have better projectors now than you did back in 2009. So like, remastering is just going to like refine the detail and whatever the DCP prints that they have to show to theaters, like, because they're not using film anymore on the projectors to begin with.
Sure.
But no, I mean, whatever work was being done, I'm just happy that AMC, Cinemark respectively, were showing it well. That was the threat that I was worried about, that they just, like, you know, they wouldn't do what they need to do to properly display the film, but they did. So I mean, I can't complain.
They certainly did. One of the things I want to ask. Oh yeah, go ahead.
I'm just trying to look it up. I see that Paranorman was shot in 3D. I can't find if the other ones were as of yet.
I can't recall, but I think I remember watching Paranorman in both formats. And so, but I still quite enjoy Paranorman for a lot of reasons. But we'll get there at maybe like another Halloween special.
I know that Paranorman was, I saw it in 3D because I have a picture of me and my friends seeing it in 3D with our special Paranorman 3D glasses.
I dig that. I want to ask you about the cultural impact of Coraline through the years, and your observations on it. It's obviously been quite a generational thing, because again, 15 years is enough time for a child to grow up. But it has also entered our cultural zeitgeist too, because I think people will dress up as Coraline, will cosplay as Coraline. And I'm curious, like, what your views on that has been, because I don't know if the other Leica films have been as strong as this necessarily, but they still have like their champions. But Coraline seems to have really broken through. Like, what a movie, what a first movie for a studio.
I mean, as far as the, for one thing, out the gate, their first film has a female lead, which goes a long way. I think it's a testament to how strong the film is that there's an audience that just likes seeing this character. There are toys and people cosplay and all those kinds of things that certainly reflect an idea that, hey, this character specifically, we really enjoy. Can I say the same about the other Leica films? Not necessarily offhand, but Coraline does have a, and it's not like the others don't have iconic looks, whether it's Paranorman's hair, a Sasquatch, or a little boy, little Japanese boy voiced by an English kid with the guitar.
Or even like the Box Trolls. Like, they have a very unique look too.
Yeah. But Coraline, I mean, it's not always necessarily about being first. However, if you're not first, you're last, as Ricky Bobby's dad said. But regardless, no, I do think that there is. I think the fact that it, you know, I'm not saying $20 million is this remarkable number, but in terms of it just making money this weekend compared to other new motion pictures that are out right now, that's not nothing. And I think that is a reflection of how much people like specifically this person. And, you know, whether or not that applies to all Leica films, if they start re-releasing all of them, for one thing, that'd be great, because Leica films always deserve more attention than they seem to get at the box office. Mm-hmm. That'd be nice to see them, you know, do well, not after the fact. Mm-hmm. No, I do think I don't have specific examples of like dark fairy tales that became, you know, more prevalent because Coraline was released. But I'd like to think that because of the reception of the film, it was nominated for an Oscar. You know, I'm sure it probably won some Annie Awards, among other things. You know, I think there's a fondness there that has carried forward. At least it kept the lights on at Leica,
yeah,
for one thing. You know, having great reviews and great regard, you know, a certain kind of legacy, you know, it's never a bad thing.
Yeah, I agree. And again, I think that its cultural impact has been pretty widespread, and I enjoy all of it, down to the unavailability of any sort of authorized Leica collectible / figurines, which they will sell on their Leica website, but they always sell out very quickly. And I'm always really upset because it would be cool to have, like, you know, like a 10-inch Coraline figure for your desk, or have some sort of like other mother or other father, you know, figurines at your desk. And so I'm always quite bummed out about that. But again, it's cool that there's like a scarcity to it. I think the other part of that is when you have like is Mondo still around?
Oh, yeah.
They got purchased out, but they're kind of like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, when Mondo would do like their cool posters for all the Leica stuff, like I would want that poster too. Or whether they had like a cool like Mondo vinyl for the soundtrack or whatever, still. I think that Coraline's cultural impact has actually been is quite large when you think about it. For a movie like what Aaron and I say is quote unquote like smaller in terms of like its footprint in the box office dollars, but beyond that, you know, as what Aaron talked about at the top of this show or the top of this episode, it's made quite a lot of money for a movie that is 15 years old, that is playing in a limited release and might play a little bit longer, but still something like that doesn't happen all the time. And you will get that with movies that have entered into the cultural zeitgeist in a much more like ubiquitous way, something like a Top Gun or something like, you know, a Terminator 1 from James Cameron, where it has like this cult following. And I guess Coraline does too, but still, I'm just always impressed. I root for it. I do want Leica to keep doing what they're doing, because I enjoy when people are taking their own risk. Like, obviously, like, you know, Travis Knight, son of Phil Knight, it's not as though he's like gonna be bankrupt if he makes a movie that's bad, but still, you know, there are other people that are not multimillionaires that work there too, that want to make sure that the studio does well so they can continue to do this kind of work.
It's just a shame that Travis Knight doesn't share his music within his Leica films. That's really the.
Is he a musician too?
He
dabbles.
He has some rap.
That he's Chet Hanks style.
He has. I mean.
Okay, I'll look it up later.
He had some things he was doing before he got to the stage where he's like, you know what, animation's my calling.
Yeah.
So what you're saying, though, I mean, something I thought about with this is, like, you know, by comparison to other like blockbusters, is not huge. That said, there are certain blockbusters that have the ability to be huge, get talked about in the moment, and then go away, and then come back, and they're huge again. And part of that is because you're not drowning in them constantly where they get worn out. Marvel's kind of going through that right now for a variety of reasons. That's a whole other episode. But something like, if you want to go with the most maximalist example possible, Avatar. Avatar went away for a very long time before it came back. to the point of people questioning the validity of Avatar's success. But
yeah.
Then it came back and it became, again, one of the top three biggest movies of all time. And it's not because every week on Twitter, you know, Kevin Feige talked about Avatar, or there is multiple TV shows or any number of things to kind of keep it in the conversation. It just felt special because you don't have one of these all the time. And that's what Laika feels like. You don't have one of these all the time. Do I wish that when we got them, people would just race out in droves to see them? Absolutely.
Sure.
Because again, I like all of these fucking movies. Like when, so it's like,
And for all like very unique reasons too.
For sure. Yeah. No, I there's a very specific reason why I love Missing Link more than most people seem to. There's very specific reasons why I love like Paranorman is the best. They all have their things that shine about them, and they all have obviously unifying elements as far as the kind of, you know, the animation and the quirkiness or what have you.
They tend to all have like a theme too of personal hardship for the main character. Again, that is not easy. Usually the main character is a child or a young person.
There's things going on there that I certainly can appreciate on every level. But yeah, it like if we're talking about a legacy, like I mentioned, one hopes that this extends to the brand and not necessarily just Coraline. And by the time Wildwood comes out, which does not have a studio, by the way, so far, it's not being distributed by anyone specifically. Whereas Coraline through Kubo were all focus features, then Missing Link was Annapurna.
Yeah, correct.
And now Wildwood, so far, no attachment. A24 could be interesting if they picked it up, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. But regardless, by the time it does come out, it would be neat to see like the esteem that Laika has you know, gone for over the years. And Wildwood's, I think they're, it's easily their longest break between features at this point, because Missing Link was like 2019. Yeah, it's been a minute. Like, so it'd be great to be like, oh, finally, a new Laika film's coming out. We should go see that. And that leads to like good results. Would I say $500 million? No, but something more respectable, something, you know, something realistic, but still successful would be great to see for a change. So,
yeah, I want to ask you if you have watched this many times, like, have you picked up anything new this go around? It doesn't have like, anything profound.
No, I feel like I space it out enough where every time I forget if it's either Keith David or Ian McShane that voices the cat. Like every time I'm like, because it has the credits or whatever, and I'm like, I'm looking at all the names, like Keith David and Ian McShane, and they both have great voices.
And
I always like see both of their names, and I'm like, one of them's the cat, but which one would make more sense? Like, that is Keith David. But I like that that's the feeling I get every time I see both of them. It's like, both of these guys could crush that cat character if they could.
They really could, yeah. I mean, Keith David would be really good, like, the mouse general guy, too. I mean, you can work both ways.
They can all work. Did I take anything new away this time around? I mean, it was more of just, like, a rediscovery of just how great the theatrical 3D presentation was. Because I've seen it at home where, you know, the chintzy glasses that work, but they're still chintzy glasses. So seeing it again on a big screen with the real 3D, it's like, fuck yeah, this is the best. This is why I specifically wanted to come and see this movie in theaters again, because it rocks that way. How about you? Did you take anything away?
I had laughed before, but now as watching it as an older person, I was like, this movie's actually got some really, really good zingers. It's actually funnier than maybe I originally even thought. I think that the dad is funnier, like the real dad, not other dad. But he's got some really funny lines, and also the way that it's like subtly funny too is also like really good. So whether this be like YB saying something like, I gotta go now, or I can hear my grandmother calling. And she's like, your grandmother is calling. And she starts throwing shit at him or whatever. But just line delivery, subtleness of funniness, it's a really funny movie, in addition to being entryway gateway horror.
That was the other thing, too, that I already talked about. The fact that it just straight up feels like a horror movie when I watch it now. Like, regardless of appropriate
age. I mean, you talked about the opening credits.
Yeah.
It's got Other Mother's weird hands sewing shit.
Like, I don't tend to be like, you know, afraid to tell somebody something's a horror movie, because I'm happy to embrace the idea that many things are horror movies that people don't want to talk about. But this one, if like it comes up, it's like, yeah, Coraline is a horror movie. Like, it's not going to be a hesitation at this point. Like, that was my other, I think, takeaway from watching it this time around. Anything else on Coraline?
I wanted to ask you, sort of like the, not the legacy of Laika necessarily, but why do you think that other studios have not really done this necessarily?
Done what?
Stop motion animation.
Because
we've seen cool things from Sony doing the Lego movies, and we've seen cool things from, again, DreamWorks doing their style of animation where it looks like flat 2D, but it's actually 3D. And we've seen, obviously, the Pixars of the world, which really set off a different trend. But I'm curious your thoughts here.
Ed Burton's done it a couple times now with The Corpse Bride. And
that's
with,
true. Yeah. Sorry.
Frank and Weenie.
Yeah.
If I had to guess, it's because it's expensive. It's expensive for an animation department to entirely upset their, you know, what they do for the sake of something else without having obvious payoffs in mind. I mean, we've just talked about it. I mean, most of like, we like Laika. They're not the biggest of films, you know? And in a world where in the same year as Coraline, Up is making upwards of almost $1 billion, it's like, why make a film this way if people aren't going to go see it? That's a very corporate thing to say, but I mean, it's the truth. That's how business works. So I think it's a matter of profitability and effort. And if you can get someone like a Tim Burton, who just made you $1 billion off of Alice in Wonderland, yeah, you're going to give him whatever he wants. And he's like, I want to make a Frankenweenie movie. Sure, okay, you can give him the money to do a Frankenweenie movie.
Yeah.
But not everybody's Tim Burton.
Possibly his best film in the last, like, 10 years. you're right. Yeah, we haven't seen Beetlejuice yet.
Like, Big Eyes, I guess, would be better than Frankenweenie.
Big Eyes is pretty good. Underappreciated.
But, yeah, you're not wrong. I'm not even down on Burton. It's just more like, yeah, it's been a long time since we've seen like an amazing Tim Burton movie. But no, I think that's what it comes down to. I think it's a matter of a lot of effort goes into it. It's a very specialized skill, you know. I mean, there's only so many Aardmans, Laikas, and Henry Selicks in the world that like want to spend all of their time, because it's a lot of time. That's the other thing. It takes a while.
It does, yeah.
It takes a while, it costs a lot, and it doesn't seem to have much ROI. So it's like, well, it's a matter of, it's really a love of the game type of situation. And Leica's devoted their entire company, you know, ethos to, this is what we do here. Where Disney's like, we like to make more money, and we're not seeing that so far with what this is.
Yeah, that's actually a really interesting point. I don't know if you have an answer for this, not that you have to, but because like it can kind of be independently self-funded to some degree, they're still looking for distributors. They still want to sell the rights of their movies still, and they still want to make a profit. But because they don't have to, like, quote unquote, like, please shareholders, do you think that they're able to do that kind of risk for their stories that they're telling?
I think, like you mentioned, Travis Knight is in a comfortable position,
right? And he's independently wealthy,
and as the CEO of Laika, if they don't make a profit, it's not like he goes to the board and says, we didn't do it this time. Like, there's some answers that they answer some questions, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that's still what their company is, and they've licensed things out. Like, they've done smaller, like, things for other studios or whatnot, beyond just making feature films. And I'm sure there's like whatever method they have in place is whatever the method they have in place to stay in, you know, in the business of doing the stuff they do. But their goal is very much to, like, be successful. And it's just, you know, it's unfortunate that hasn't worked out all the time.
Yeah.
This Missing Link was a big gamble on their part. It cost, I believe, more than most of their other features based on both.
And
the star power.
Really, and big names. Yeah.
Yeah. The star power, and they traded companies. Right. And like, is, Focus may not have been pulling off like huge hits for Laika, but Annapurna, it's their lowest grossing film by far. Like, it made under 30 million total, where at least the other ones all topped at least 60. more for some. It's only been going down. That's the other thing. Coraline made the most, and it's only gone down from there, which is a true shame. it sucks to know that. But yeah, I mean, keep on keeping on, I'm sure, is what Travis Knight's saying about, like, he's like,
I hope so.
Keep making this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so, because
He's the director on Wildwood. So
I'm glad. Yeah, I mean, it's always good to hear about doing a new feature, a new production. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but you're right that his independent wealthiness has allowed him to do other things that are a little bit more interesting.
I'm sure he funneled that Bumblebee money into the next Laika production to something.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, that wasn't a bad movie.
It's okay. One of the arguably the best Transformers movies.
Yeah, one of the better Transformers movies. Exactly. When I think about the other movies and how they're kind of really digging into some of their older things and making sequels out of them, whether that be Inside Out 2 and or Kung Fu Panda 4, you know what I mean? Like, Kung Fu Panda 4 is like, I saw an image of it this past week for, I think, just movies of 2024. And I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot that movie even came out. So that's one of the things where, you can cash in on some of your old IP. But I'm glad that there hasn't been necessarily like a sequel per se to any of the like of things.
In that regard, I think the stories are just so independent and they're not, you know. If you make a sequel, you make a sequel because, hey, we can do the thing more. But at the same time, the movies have to be like profitable in a certain kind of way to be like, oh, we certainly demand more of this. Could Coraline come back in some form? It'd be weird because it's like, would Gaiman want to make another book? Would they?
Yeah.
Would there be that? But it's like, why? For one thing, they only have what, 6 movies? Like, it's not like it's like we gotta reach into that sequel bag and get things going.
Yeah, I agree.
But if they wanted to make like an Avengers style, let's bring all these characters together, I'm not going to win with that. I'd be all about seeing Paranorman, or sorry, just Norman. And
does he lose his powers at the end?
No.
Yeah. He still sees his grandma.
No, it's very sweet. The family embraces the fact that he's their weird son that sees ghosts.
That's right. Yeah. Well, they should have embraced their uncle.
Have both Fannings from Coraline and the Box Trolls come together. I believe Bran Stark from King of Kubo and the Two Strings, who's now King of Game of Thrones, he can be in involved.
Yeah,
and have Zach Galifianakis's what's he named, like Tracy? Is that what he names himself?
I think he calls himself like a really cool name, like
Susan.
That.
Susan. He calls himself Susan.
Even better.
Will be right on Missing Link and how much good stuff that film is. People act like that's like, oh, that's when they really dropped the ball. And I'm like, Missing Link rules.
Missing Link is really good.
It's so fun.
Like, as far as like the villains go, you're talking about how villains, sometimes they're a little bit just off in a way that is like less interesting. Yes, that is that film where the villain's end is just like, let me fall off a cliff. But yeah, Missing Link is solid. You know, it's about finding yourself, man, and loving yourself.
And friendship.
Friends you meet along the way. And it's also like possibly Hugh Jackman, one of Hugh Jackman's best non-Wolverine movies.
It is. Yeah.
Because like he's got like maybe if you include what was the boxing robot movie we like?
Real Steel.
You include Real Steel, the
Prestige.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
He's got plenty of movies, but no, yeah, I don't need to rank them all.
It is one of his better movies.
But it's really good.
Yeah, exactly. I'd watch this over Greatest Showman.
Oh, easily.
Exactly. And they're both wearing the same costumes.
They are, yes.
Yeah.
I forgot where we were.
We were talking about the end of Coraline. Anything else?
I got nothing else I want to add beyond just people should see Coraline if they haven't seen it already. I think it's a worthwhile feature for sure. If they catch it in the theaters while it's still out there, and presumably they'll have more time because, again, it was successful enough where they're going to extend the amount of time that it's in theaters, do it. To see it especially see it in 3D, assuming that you're fine with that, you don't have any issue with seeing things in 3D,
right?
See it that way, do it. It's
great. hard to echo, like watch it whichever way that you can, whether it be streaming or whether it be on physical media or in theaters in its ultra limited engagement, and definitely try and check it out in 3D. it is one of the better uses of 3D. I've seen some 3D movies in my day, and the only two that I would like hard recommend would be this and Hugo, if you could ever catch Hugo again in 3D.
Oh my God, I'd love to see Hugo in 3D in a theater again.
That was a really, really good use of 3D.
Mm-hmm. So. That Scorsese guy, he's going places.
Yeah, whatever happened to him?
He just hangs out with his kid making TikToks all day now.
Freaking millennial movie makers these days.
I think she's Gen Z. I think she's a millennial.
No, I'm talking about Marty.
Scorsese. Yeah. Millennials Scorsese.
Millennial Scorsese. Jeez, man. You know, they make one hit and they're just like, oh, I've made it. I'm just going to become an influencer now.
Millennial Scorsese. Yeah, he was big on Limp Bizkit. All right. That's it. That's good. We did. Yeah. That's on our nights.
Nights.
Making up a song about Coraline. She's a peach, she's a doll, she's a pal of mine. She's as cute as a button in the eyes of everyone who ever laid their eyes on Coraline. When she comes around exploring, Mom and I will never ever make it boring. Our eyes will be on Coraline.